Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Gargoyle from General Management by Kate Pryor, narrated by Sierra Klein. 1. In the Monster Resources Manual, it says, every creature's needs for accommodations will be met by Evil Incorporated. Specifically, Section 13.4.2c, subsection Respect for Monsters' Rights and Anti-Discrimination, says, the company will respect the rights of all employed monsters, regardless of oaths, bloodlusts, undead dependents, or physiological strangeness. I know, because I wrote it. I put the form for accommodations and accommodated leave where anyone who needed it could access it and easily fill it out. But in order to fill out the form, the company has to recognize your status as a monster. According to Section 13.4.2f, the company will never use personal information for any means other than business and will keep it under strict confidentiality. Such information will never be disclosed without explicit personal consent. After the manager who hired me as her replacement put in her 2 weeks, no one at the office ever learned what I was, and I have kept it that way. I've been getting away with it by the skin of my teeth, working mostly remote, going into the office only when it's absolutely necessary to make an appearance, to hand out pamphlets to people bumping up against company policy, and bare my teeth at anyone I've opened a file for recently. I don't like going in because it necessitates putting on my face, mascara, lipstick, the rest.
Gwen, are you there?
A voice calls out of the shimmering mishmash of faces floating within the summoning circle laid out before me. There's a company-wide seance, and our chief evil overlord has remarked more than once at how proud he is that he doesn't have to cajole us to get people to be seen. There's at least 10 other people who, like me, have erased that part of the summoning diagram to avoid having to be visually paying attention. A couple weak bastards still buckled at his remark. I'm not good at hiding that I'm less than thrilled to be talking to people, and making it look like I'm paying attention is more work than actually listening is. I don't need to participate in company retreat planning bingo, or whatever they're talking about. There was an email about this, with an itinerary attached. But we have to go over it all to waste time, I guess. Yeah, here, I answer, not looking at the seance at all.
I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
Sighing, I pick up my lighter and flick it over one of the candles that had burned out. Sorry, I was muted. I'm here, and I can hear you just fine. The blood drains from my face when I look at the summoning circle again and realize everyone else has dropped off the call. It's just me and the chief evil overlord. I have to pretend like I've been paying attention and not been clicking through different job postings for the last half hour. I thought applying to new jobs would be easier this time around. After all, I've been here long enough that I could apply for something with a more senior job title. I shouldn't have to go through all the same self-doubt as last time, thinking I don't have enough experience under my belt. But as I'm scrolling through listings that demand master's degrees, twice the industry know-how, and the enthusiasm of a person a lot younger than me, all it's making me do is realize I'm not even great at this job. I swallow and try not to telegraph all of that on my face. How's it going, Savin? The faceless cloak cowl looks back at me with what I can only imagine is disappointment that I was clearly not keeping up.
I received your email about the retreat.
Oh, yeah, that. I just think, do you really need me to be there? I mean, it's really just the sales team presenting about last year's revenue and our new products. I don't really handle any of that, I say, my excuses feeling weaker with every word. I was thinking, it'd be a great time to get through a lot of paperwork and reorganize my filing system, you know, since everyone else would be gone. I'd have a full week without meetings. Not things you say to your boss's boss, really, but I'm desperate. I had originally planned to just take the time off, before it was made clear that everyone was expected to attend the retreat. Not to mention, then we'd save the money on my travel and hotel.
Gwen, he says,
crackly with static through the seance. I fall silent. My teeth worry into my lower lip. It would be so easy to just fill out a form and get the time off, no questions asked. Except there would be questions and uncomfortable looks and gossip to field when I got back.
It would be more economical,
Savin agrees, and my heartbeat ticks up in a rush of hope. He continues.
Unfortunately, I do need you there. Kathy and Ted will be in attendance, and as their MR caseworker, you are best equipped to handle them.
My never-ending source of paperwork, Kathy and Ted. Their file is about a mile thick. Unfortunately, their jobs involve quite a bit of working together, but they can't stand each other and send in complaints over every little thing. Ted is mad Kathy misspelled his name several times on their latest email thread with a distributor. Kathy thinks Ted is deliberately undermining her contributions. Ted thinks Kathy interrupts only him during meetings on purpose, etc. The list goes on. There's really nothing too small for them.
Their new supervisor will be at the retreat as well,
Savin informs me.
I would like you to fill him in on the best conflict prevention solutions or strategies.
I frown as he rambles about whatever it is he thinks I do around here, and wait for him to finish. Did we hire someone on?
The other office did.
The other office is a much smaller location. It doesn't have enough employees to justify its own MR, HR, or IT departments, so they usually have to submit a ticket to our office to get those problems solved.
Yes, given their particular circumstances. I thought it was time they had new leadership. I sought out an expert in the field.
Oh, sure. An expert. Someone who is actually going to manage Kathy and Ted and their problems, instead of letting all the emails I CC them on pile up in their inbox. He pauses, then adds with just a hint of excitement.
We snagged him from a much bigger company. You might have heard of him. Vladimir Grotes.
Oh, wow. I reply, unable to fake my enthusiasm. I wonder what kind of iron fist-type leadership guru Savin has in mind. Just one more thing I really can't stand. The kind of weirdo who posts long, practically nonsensical spiels on business forums about how keeping employees in the office is best for morale, and then thinks a policy change tacked to the break room wall will do all the work. Or possibly the worst option, someone who is actually hyper-competent and has centuries of experience under his belt and a wall of awards and certificates to match. Just the thought of it makes me feel like I don't know enough to be here and that I'm going to have to bullshit about my own competency. Like his arrival means I've immediately forgotten how to do my job. The call ends, mercifully, with this week's prospects a little worse for wear. The last thing I want to have to go through is 1,000 pages of complaint forms explaining Kathy and Ted's particular dynamic to a big-deal manager who would be able to solve their problems in a snap and ask me why it took so long. I really don't want to go to this retreat. I can already feel the ceaseless hunger starting to gnaw at my insides, insatiable and needy. If it's anything like the last time this cycle came around, I'm going to become a feral version of myself. 2. Don't book flights for work trips with anyone in your department. Have some work-life separation for your own sanity. I book my ticket on a red-eye flight a few precious hours before I have to meet and mingle with people I'm already cursed to spend eternity in daily conference call meetings with. I specifically booked a flight that wasn't listed on the shared spreadsheet, not caring that it was at an untenable hour of night. I don't care if I get an email from accounting again about taking the same flight so that we can all carpool to the hotel from the airport. A girl has got to maintain her boundaries. The fact that you're staying at a gorgeous vista doesn't change the fact that you're going to be spending all of it with the same people whose meeting invites you've been avoiding. I turn away from the ticket kiosk with the single-minded pursuit of getting to the terminal where my flight is, only to bump into my suitcase. It starts rolling down the incline to the airport security check without me. Mice scramble to find any kind of traction in my slippers and chase my bag down is deeply inelegant. A flurry of sweatpants and unbrushed hair fighting against the unusually smooth tile. Come back, come back, come back, I hiss at my bag fruitlessly. I didn't really expect my bag to listen, and it doesn't. At least, not to me.
You need to stop right there, miss.
A fathomlessly deep voice commands, velvety low with a stern edge to it. My spine locks up. I look up at the source of the voice and the imposing figure whose shadow I've just slid into. He turns, the casual grace in the movement of his wings and tail becoming fluid, yet formal. Gargoyles are something of a rare sighting. It's a lot more common to find them at Fortune 666 companies in the Peak District, always wearing crisp suits and thick-chained watches. This guy isn't any different, but when my eyes meet his, a deep, molten amber, I feel the warmth in my cheeks burn through me like whiskey, spreading all the way down to my lower stomach. My posture changes, like I desperately need to get a good grade in standing still. Like that's a normal thing to want. He turns around slowly to face me, and I'm a little taken aback at how my weird little presence could collide with someone as put together as him. In airports, at least, people this well-dressed slip past me as easily as oil and water. My bag rolls until it collides with his leg, like a beanbag hitting a brick wall. I don't think he even notices his eyes are so trained on me. The weight of his full attention is staggering. Maybe it's just that I haven't really been having face-to-face conversations with people much lately. Okay, this is how I know my cycle is about to kick me in the face in the middle of this work trip. I'm never this easily interested in people right off the bat.
Not you. You're perfect the way you are, he says,
eyes never leaving mine.
It's just your bag that's disobedient.
Disobedient, I repeat, perhaps giving away the fact that I clearly think he's gorgeous. His voice has a grip on me that is too easy to give in to.
Running off without you, he explains,
offering me a little smile. Yeah, she's all hyped up on sugar. It's all the plain snacks I put in her, I say. He's cute. He's very cute. Either this is a sign that I'm absolutely starved for connection, or he's downright charming. I honestly can't tell. He chuckles, a sound that rumbles low through the portal and directly to my clit, bringing it out of hibernation. He smells good, inviting and warm, a little bit like a fireplace. I take an unnecessary step towards him, and I can feel between my thighs how instantly wet I am. My stomach feels warm as a tension-uncurling shiver moves through me. Then, something finally clicks, how my spine went rigid at his command. Did I? No, that's not it. That wasn't what that interaction was. I did not just fucking cream my panties because some stranger was a little bit suave in front of me. Why wouldn't I just immediately do what he told my bag to do? But he... Pink creeps up in my cheeks. I cover my mouth, even as he holds my eyes and his nostrils flare. And even though I don't know how keen a gargoyle's sense of smell is, I know he knows. My cycle is starting already. Shit. I don't really know how to get out of this moment. I give him a brief little head shake, probably not doing a great job at concealing how little I want to be here. He nods and steps back a little, his large bat-like wings flexing with the movement. They look soft, even with this stony texture that sends cracks scattering through them like veins. The space allows me to fully look him up and down, from the dark purplish blue of his suit, the fact that he has a vest piece with a little gold chain leading into some hidden pocket, to the high arches of his hooves. My eyes linger low on him, on the shape of his long, thick, tapering tail that swishes gently behind him, moving gracefully with his wings. He stoops a moment to find my bag's handle and rolls it back toward me. I take it, smile through a feeling that I imagine is what dying is like, and turn in a different direction.
Well, there's the reason I don't leave the house, as if I needed reminding.
I hate that it's only going to get worse throughout the work trip. I give myself a few moments standing outside the bathroom like I'm waiting to get in, willing amnesia into existence. When that doesn't work, I give myself a little shake and get on with my flight itinerary. It's fine. It has to be. Drifting through the TSA line, I reassure myself that at least I'll never see him again. The world's too big to bump into the same person twice. An airport worker opens the little crowd control dividers, releasing the stanchion belt and directing everyone stuck in my part of the line toward various luggage scans.
"Take out everything electronic, miss,"
a skeleton TSA agent tells me, just as I heft my carry-on bag into the bin. I sigh, pull my work laptop out of the bag, and lay it flat in the next bin with my suitcase, watching the one bin with my shoes disappear into the scanner. I always forget about that part. Before I worked for this company, I never had to travel so much. The next TSA agent shuffles me through the scan and pat down, and when I come out, all ruffled, of the other end of this assembly line, there he is again. The gargoyle guy is, of course, immaculately put together, tail flicking as he waits for his bag as well. He's got his eyes trained on the TSA agent going through his suitcase with unnecessary skepticism. It looks from here that someone's about to go through my bag as well. Figures. All this hurry up and wait, I grumble out loud, sympathizing with him before I actually realize what I'm doing. I'm too used to just airing my thoughts to nothing and no one. I've really got to rein this in. I attempt to exude an air of utter apathy when his eyes catch mine. It's what I do whenever I go to the office, mostly to try to cancel out the hope of being swallowed up by the floor. I've seen that happen to people at work, and there's nothing like a visual image for your social anxiety to latch onto. He doesn't say anything at first, but there's a faint glimmer of recognition. I guess it was only a couple minutes ago that I nearly orgasmed in front of him just from smelling him. I mean, he can't really know that happened, right? I wish I had the capacity to act like it didn't happen at all, instead of still trying to recover from it. After a beat, the gargoyle offers in a low, almost conspiratorial voice.
"Do you think we're being timed?"
There's really nothing to be said about airports that hasn't been said before. I can't think of anything normal to reply with, so I chirp,
"It's training for a 5-minute mile. That's why all the terminals are so far apart."
He doesn't laugh, which, ouch, but fair. I'm ready to just decide my ego shouldn't take any more hits for this stranger. Mr. Overdressed for the airport offers me an arm to lean on as I hop around barefooted, trying to get my shoe on. Okay, that's sweet of him. A little old-fashioned, maybe. I lean on his arm and wrestle with my slipper to get it on over my now sweaty bare foot, and he doesn't budge an inch the entire time. Maybe it's just the lingering shock of that weird little shared moment further back in the airport, but I'm a little impressed by his general sturdiness. Not that that's something to be impressed by. That's not a quality people say they're looking for. Ever. Maybe more is phasing me than just this gargoyle in his fucking 3-piece suit who looks like he'd be easily cast to play a gentleman in a historical drama. Maybe it's the obvious intensity of the utterly different places we are at in our lives. Maybe it's seeing my greasy sweatshirt sleeve against the craftsmanship of his suit. Generally, I don't care that some people wear their best business casual clothing to fly in. I'm firmly in the comfort category. I've got on the sweatshirt half of a velour tracksuit I've long lost the bottom half to, leggings, and slippers that have just enough of a firm bottom that I can pretend they're acceptable shoes. Still, it does make me feel just a touch underdressed to be leaning on him. "Where are you going that requires a suit this time of night?" I ask. Because, actually, I've decided it is really weird for him to be dressed like this, now that I think about it. What are boundaries in the airport, anyway? His attention dips from whatever sign he was reading to me, and a wrinkle cracks his stony brow. I make a self-aggrandizing sweep towards the rest of myself, fully leaning into his arm because he just does not budge.
This is me at my comfiest.
Oh, that.
He shrugs. He looks a little lost for words for a moment.
I am also at my comfiest.
I blink. Once. Twice. I look him over again to make sure his suit isn't just some really interesting footy pajamas I mistook for formal wear. It's not. I'm sure that, at this hour of sleep deprivation, I only barely conceal the sheer amount of no, really, that crosses my face.
I'm not judging.
Just the smallest amount, he says, because I'm not fooling him.
I mean, for a suit, it looks comfy. I try, and he rolls his eyes.
There is a hint of a smile there.
If nothing else, it makes you memorable.
That gets him, and he looks away to hide the wider smile. Just as I finish getting on my slippers, the bin full of my open suitcase and all the things that used to be neatly folded in it rolls down the ramp, along with the blue latex-gloved hands of the TSA agent, probing through my belongings.
Ma'am,
the skeleton TSA agent calls, snatching my and the gargoyle gentleman's attentions to... Oh, for fuck's sake. Is it regulation to hold it up so everyone can see exactly what I pleasure myself with? Was the luggage scan, no doubt seen by a few more agents, not enough? Because that one happens to be a silicone vibrator molded in the image of a chimera's cock, veins and webbing included. Memorable is suddenly not such a great thing to be. The TSA agent glances between me and my vibrator, gesturing me over. I let go of the gargoyle's arm quickly and step back. His eyes meet mine again for a fraction of a second before I'm ducking my head and sliding over to my bag, stuffing everything back inside.
Believe it or not, there's actually more embarrassing things in my bag, I say. Because, okay, caught red-handed with a sex toy, but I'm not about to toss it out with my over 5 liquid ounces of conditioner now.
Then again, TSA doesn't harass vampires over their personal items when it's a suitcase full of blood pouches, do they? Mr. Overdressed gives me a look, and at this point, I don't care. I can't. I'm beyond. I give him a deep stare of pure, unbothered apathy.
You can't fly with these batteries,
the TSA agent starts to explain to me. And I nod, watching her practiced hand open the end and pop them out. They land heavily in the trash.
Could have done all that with a little more subtlety, I think, trying not to grind my teeth.
When I get everything stowed away and my bag zipped up again, the gargoyle's gone. Not that I expected him to stick around or anything. It's fine. I don't care. In a couple hours, I'll have forgotten he exists, and he'll have done the same for me. I make it through the rest of the airport, and waiting to board my flight without any more mishaps or making a fool of myself. When I'm finally seated, I start pulling out everything in my bag that I need for my pre-flight ritual of do not disturb. It's the main reason I started booking red-eyes I knew no one from work would be on. I would rather sit next to a two-headed baby where one head keeps waking up the other than next to someone who is going to make me think about work for a 4-hour flight. Two-headed baby doesn't care that I'm wrapped up in a lap blanket, an eye mask, a neck pillow, and noise-canceling earbuds, creating my own sensory deprivation experience with a true crime podcast to keep me company. The last thing I want is to have to repeatedly unravel my cocoon for a coworker poking me awake with, Gwen, what do you think about? I'm not thinking about anything.
If the plane crashes, it can do so without my awareness.
I play on my phone for a few minutes before shooting an email to v.grotes@evil.co.com, the address Savin gave me to forward Ted and Kathy's combined incident records and get the new manager up to speed. On a whim, I search for Vladimir Grotes online, and of course, a number of articles about some hotshot startup company came up first. Every few words I read into it, I roll my eyes and give up two paragraphs in before I give myself motion sickness. I know the type of guy he's going to be. Hovering over my email, my company profile pops up. My name, a chart describing who I report to in the company, and a picture of me when I first started working there. It's such a stark contrast to see the younger, peppier, full of energy, smiling me with a face full of makeup and my hair curled. I try not to catch the reflection in my phone's screen. Greasy blonde hair, my face sullen without blush to liven it up. This Vladier guy doesn't have a picture when I tap his company profile from the email address. His profile is significantly less filled in. He probably hasn't gotten around to it yet. Then, I put my phone into airplane mode, slip on my eye mask, and slip away from the world of the conscious, save for the occasional jostling of someone getting up from the middle seat next to me. I chose the window seat specifically so I don't have to get up for anything or anyone. I'm getting as much of the sleep I'm missing out on as I can. My ears popping wakes me up when the plane finally lands. I'm slowly returning to the land of the living and undead, unwrapping myself from my sensory cocoon one item at a time, folding them carefully away into my once meticulously packed carry-on. I glance at my neighbor in the middle seat and nearly break my neck on the double take. Him. Again. This is getting ridiculous. He's also dozed off, his chin in his hand, propped up on the armrest between seats. At least he's not awake to register my reaction. I'm just about done squeezing the air out of my neck pillow until it's as good as vacuum-sealed in its bag by the time the gargoyle I can't seem to get rid of starts to stir. I pointedly look out the window and refuse to make eye contact until I feel the row behind us start to shuffle out into the aisle to get off the plane.
"You're a sound sleeper," he remarks,
several minutes into us both being awake. He's turning on his phone to an email notification noise, placidly opening it as people start getting antsy about exiting the plane.
"Yes, well," I mumble,
but stop myself before pointing out that I've embarrassed myself enough times in front of him already. A few times bumping into each other back in the terminal was enough. A whole 4 hours of sitting next to him probably would have chipped away at my remaining pride and revealed every overly personal detail about myself. He doesn't let me trail off, though. He raises a brow and repeats,
"Well...
That's the advantage of traveling in your PJs."
I shrug, and then bury my attention in my phone until we leave. I'm so done with this guy. Handsome, besuited gargoyle or not. I'd like a little dignity to remain for tomorrow to pretend to enjoy my coworkers. The one good thing about these corporate retreats to faraway locales is that anyone you bump into, you're pretty much guaranteed to never see again.
3.
I'm late for the first presentation of the company meetings, of course. Working from home, I can usually just open my laptop and attend meetings from my bed. No one ever notices I'm late or barely present. I always forget how much time it takes to do my makeup and hair and put on nice clothes with terrible, practically non-functional zippers. Also that I look like the put-together, confident, competent person they remember interviewing, and not the greasy, pajamaed, boneless creature I revert to when I'm alone. The meeting room is dim. Half of the lights are off for the projector and our chief evil overlord to give his welcome presentation. When I crack open the door, a number of heads turn to glance my way. The conference room is laid out with rows of slim tables that sit two or three at each, arranged and angled, lecture hall style, to face the projector screen. Thankfully, there's a seat near the door still open that I can quickly slide into, even if it's next to one of my least favorite people.
"Gwen!"
Deanna whisper exclaims at me. She's everyone's favorite resident, overbearing coworker, who makes a competition out of being the nicest person in the office. Deanna grins at me and wiggles her eyebrows.
She smells overwhelmingly like chipper positivity, sugar, and flowers. It's a little...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?